Welcome to the Entrepreneur Experiment podcast with me, Gary Fox. Every weekend, I bring you 10 minutes of our most impactful episodes and call them mentor moments. This week, your mentor is James Welton. He was a teenage prodigy, just 17 when he hacked the iPod Nano, which shot him to global stardom. Here is this week's mentor, James. Digitalization. What exactly is it and how can it transform your business? Well, the local enterprise office have you covered. Digitalization is incorporating digital tools into your business to improve efficiency and productivity, saving you time, money, and energy. It could be anything, from stock control to an online payments or booking system, and now there's a grant for it all. The Grow Digital Voucher helps businesses go digital and pay for those improvements that will make a big difference to the way your business operates. And the best thing about it all, the local enterprise office can handle it all for you. Any business from any sector with up to 50 employees can apply for the Digital for Business audit, and from there they will give you a bespoke digital roadmap for your business. Once that's sorted, you can apply for the Grow Digital Voucher to help pay for those changes. Simple as that. So, if you want to make those first digital steps with your business to help save you time, money, and energy, talk to your local enterprise office today or go to localenterpriseoffice.ie/digital to find out more, or click the link in the description below. Now, on with today's episode.
How did it even start? Like, how did you get the idea for that?
Yeah, it was very accidental. Like, I had started like programming at a young age, like making websites when I was like 9 or something. Not that I was like particularly intelligent or anything, but I enjoyed like making animations on the computer, wanted to show them to friends. So I learned how to make websites to put them up, bought a book on HTML to do it, and just enjoyed like messing around with computers, building different things, exploring like hacking and building like web apps and games. And I think in like sixth year, I won this like award for like best designed web page or something in this secondary school competition. And around that time, I'd like found an exploit for a version of the iPod Nano that came out. Now, it wasn't like a particularly impressive like exploit. Like, I figured out how to get it to load a configuration file in a way it wasn't supposed to. And like,
I remember this now. Yeah. The fact you said that has popped back into my head. What did it do?
Well, it was basically like you could access some configuration files on the device, but when you would like edit them, the device would just like compare it to a previous valid version of the file it had, and then just like ignore the change that you did. So I figured out if you got the device to like reset at the right moment after writing that file, it would be forced to load up with the new modified version. And then you could like remove icons, try and enable features. But I think the hype was like, it was like the first exploit for this device.
And also, Apple always seemed to be unhackable, right?
Where they were, there was like the, I think around then there was always like there was the iPhone jailbreaking community. There was, there's a lot of people who are interested in that space.
I did a lot of that back in the day.
Yeah, oh, the custom themes.
I earned a lot of money. I probably earned more money from that than I have in the rest of my career. That was just so lucrative back then.
It was, it was pretty mad, because even, I'm trying to remember if like the, how long the App Store had been out for then, but yeah, it was another part of the hype. People were like, oh, Schoolboy hacks Apple. And I was like, it's not really.
Because you did go pretty viral like at that time.
Well, I put it up online, and like, there was definitely, what was nice was there was people in, I guess, the iPhone hacking and jailbreaking community who were like super accomplished, like way, way more skilled than me, who I felt were doing real things. But they reached out, they're like, oh yeah, it'll probably go like this. It'll be a bit of hype. Like, and then people in my school found out that I did this thing. And again, they were like, one of my accomplishments was falling asleep in a fourth year English class and waking up in the fifth year's English class, which I think the teacher, he was right to do it to me. Fortunately, he didn't save me. But they were like, well, yeah, if James can program, why can't we? And people started asking me. So I started teaching them twice a week after school, and like how to build websites, how to make games, try and keep it like fun, a bit different from the classroom environment where we worked on stuff that people were interested in. Because I guess for me, like programming and building things was so important. And like, whereas a lot of people had maybe like their thing was being academic or being sporty and derived a lot of identity from that, like tech and programming and building things was my sense of identity. So yeah, people from other schools started wanting to come to my school when they heard about it, and then met Bill, and we were like, well, let's try do one of these clubs outside of school.
Who's Bill?
So Bill Liao, he is my co-founder at Codarojo. He's, I guess, what age is Bill now? He's a bit older than me, but I met him at the...
It's a nice way of answering it. Bill was like, don't say it, James.
Yeah.
Bit older than Mabel, too.
he's more experienced and wise than me.
There you go. But we, nicely sidestepped.
We met at the Dublin Web Summit. Someone introduced me because I thought that I was like all Cork people, I thought I was going to stay in Cork for the rest of my life.
Okay. You guys do love that place.
That we do, like boomerangs. One day we'll come back. But they were like, well, you should meet this guy. He's based down there. And like... that whole world of, I think like only in 6 years did like the idea of like maybe working in tech or programming or entrepreneurship become like more of a reality or fixture. Like mm-hmm. I'd managed to blag a ticket. I think it was the break around October in 6th year. Someone had won a ticket to the Web Summit. They couldn't go. So on Twitter, I offered to like redesign her website, Margaret, if I could get her ticket, and she very kindly like gave me this ticket that she won.
Good trade.
So yeah, I know I really lucked out. At that event, like met a bunch of people, met like Connor Murphy for the first time.
2011, 2012, the Web Summit back then was special.
Yeah.
That was very early doors, right?
It was very, I think
was that
like
even
a,
in the
RDS
yet?
Second or third. No, it was at the Chartered Accountants House.
Unreal. Yeah. And so that was probably a very small group, was it?
It was a, God, yeah, let me try and think. How many people were at it? Maybe, I can't remember.
100, a couple hundred maybe?
Yeah, I would say.
Compared to what people associated with now is like 10,000.
Oh, yeah, no, definitely. I want to say it's somewhere between 100 to 400, but there's probably an official PR line that...
we'll steer clear of all of that. we're Switzerland when it comes to that. We'll go neither one.
I benefited personally, amazingly, off it.
I always use that father's headline. I've had my fun, and that's all that matters. That's the lie we take on this pod, right?
But I met someone introduced me to Bill, and then I was telling him about it. He said, "Well, you know," I was like, "Oh, I don't know what's going to happen after I finish secondary school. People want to keep going." And he said, well, yeah, you should just like run it outside school. We had talked about keeping it free. I never thought that people would give a space for free, that people would volunteer. I think like I had this very intimate relationship with programming where like I loved it. It was important to me. But, like I didn't see this whole shortage of programmers or basically the skills shortage in the tech industry, whereas Bill did. So he was like the perfect co-founder. And then... we ran that first session. People started coming down from Dublin to attend it and just kind of rolled with it from there. So it was
Why make it like a social enterprise? Why make it? Did you ever think, oh, this could be a big business?
I think I only realized that too late, unfortunately. No.
Wait, you can make profit at this?
Yeah, retrospective.
God damn it, Bill.
We've hit our 10th anniversary. We're going to retrospectively bring in fees. No, it was... I think the volunteer dynamic of it relied on goodwill. Because also we had things like, you know, if a lot of parents would bring their kids, the kids didn't want to be there. You had waiting lists in some of these clubs. So if the child was like misbehaving or wasn't into it, it's an easier conversation to have. Like people are volunteering here, it's doing it for free. I think if you introduce money to things, it introduces complication, then you need a lot more.
If you enjoyed that chat with James, go back and listen to the full episode. I'll see you back here on Thursday for a brand new interview.